You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning to all the intellectual outcasts out there. I have a couple of amazing returning guests. We'll go ahead and get into this thing as I have on Dr. Lene Javette, thank you, Queen, for being with me, as well as tax coach Kimberly Fowler. But if you will, Lene, we'll start with you. If you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast. You might probably don't need an introduction. You've been holding me down for years and years on this show, but I do thank you for getting up early out there on the West Coast for your boy to tackle these hard conversations. And I think today is a conversation people rarely have when it comes to business. But if you will, Queen, say hello, tell people a little bit about your background, and then we'll get them introduced to Kimberly as well. Thanks, Dr. Javette, for being with us this morning.
Absolutely, absolutely. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I love it here. This is family. I love being with you guys on these early Saturday mornings. But before I get to that, let me just say, I haven't heard the intro in a while, and that was amazing. I was like, okay, come through, Black Socrates. I loved it. Because, you know, me and you, we've been critiquing your business for a long time, and it's just everything is put together so well. I haven't had a chance to experience it in a while, so I just wanted to first give you a shout-out and just say I'm super proud of you and how far Mental Dialogue has come, and I'm just excited to be here. So I am a monetization strategist and a business coach. I specifically help Black entrepreneurs who package and sell their expertise to triple their revenue. A lot of time we leave money on the table and under the floor, and I come through and help Black businesses to collect it all.
I love it, and I have to be honest and give a shout out to my lady. She told me to change the intro, and so she was correct. So I think she might be out there listening. So Dr. Javette, if you just gave her props, so I got to give her props. But with that said,
give her props. She came through. I was like, okay.
I could dig that. But if you will, Kimberly, glad to have you Black on the show, as I like to say. If you will, Queen, tell them about yourself. It's going down this morning because you definitely wanted to be on this morning show. So thank you, Queen, for being with us. Tell them who you are.
Hey, everybody. My name is Kimberly Fowler. And hey, Lene. Oh, my gosh. hey, everybody. So my name is Kimberly Fowler, and I teach tax professionals how to start, run, and grow their own tax business. I've been a tax professional on my own for about 26 years, and so now I'm training the trainers, and I'm so excited about this topic, and I appreciate you for having me on.
No, absolutely.
Hey, Sid, how you doing?
She's acting like a homie. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, like Dr. Javette said, this is a family show, and so we definitely enjoy ourselves on this show. And if anybody out there listening, if you haven't heard from Kimberly before, yes, she sounds like she's 25, and yes, she's been doing tax business for longer than she's been living, but that's, you know, that's just how she do it. She's a certified expert in her business. but with that said, this morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you about this when it comes to being in business, why no one ever tells you this about being in business. And this can be a lot of topics, if you will. And so, Kimberly, again, you were excited about being this show, so we'll start with you. If you will, Queen, when you heard me word the question particularly that way, can you recall seeing it and the first thought that popped in your head? Because, again, this can be a lot of things, and we're going to dive all into that. But what was your first initial thought?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming through clear. Go ahead, Queen.
Okay, awesome. So, yeah, so the first thought in my head was, oh, my gosh. Like, I actually, you know, me and you talked about it. I made a post about, you know, how entrepreneurship just tests every single part of your being, you know. So the first thing that came in my head was, we need to have this discussion. I thought about, you know, actually making a blog post or something about it, about, you know, how everybody talks about all the highs and the lows. I mean, I'm sorry, all about the highs of entrepreneurship, and everybody is posting all of their wins and how amazing it is. But nobody really talks about how entrepreneurship tests your traumas, and it's just a whole journey on the other side of entrepreneurship. So that's why I was so excited about it.
No, I love it. And then, of course, you've been doing this a long time, and you coach executives, and you, like you say, you've been helping me build my business, if you will, Dr. Javette, if you will, Queen. Just your first initial thought to hearing the question worded that particular way again, why no one ever tells you about this, about being in business. Your thoughts, Queen.
I'm going to do a slow lead-in. First, I want to co-sign what Kimberly said, and that is the truth. Everybody shows the pretty side. Don't nobody talk about the bad side when your bank account got 1 cent in it and you got a $500 invoice. So that is the truth. And I want to speak about the other side of that, which is the support. A lot of times people go into entrepreneurship thinking their family and friends are going to be the first people to support them, and they aren't, and they don't know how to deal with that piece, because a lot of times we think, there's a saying, if you build it, they will come. That's not true. If you build it and you shine a light on it and you talk about it and it falls down and you build it back up and you tape it together and then you show it to your friends and then somebody else comes and likes it and then they see that they're supporting it, then your family and friends will come, and that they don't tell you that part. And I have a philosophy on why that is, but I'll tell you about that later. But that's one of the things that I would say is, a lot of times when people start a business, they feel like everybody's going to come and support them and it's going to get up and running a lot quicker, sooner, faster than it does. And they can be let down when they don't get that initial support that they're anticipating.
No, I love that. I definitely went through some personal mental anguish understanding that process, and to your point, and I'm glad you actually brought that up, that's something I didn't think about, that I absolutely try to walk people through. Again, I consider myself a philosopher, aka Black Socrates, and we take the Socratic method to trying to get to the answers to all of these various questions that we like to ask when it comes to race, sex, culture, and business in the African-American community. And you're absolutely right, Dr. Javette, in the sense that I definitely have my mind wrapped comfortably around a concept of why that is. So we're going to go to a break just a little bit early here, and maybe we can dig into that. In addition to, as always, I got plenty of cuts for us to play. So I'll have you, in a sense, we'll go ahead and respond to the cut. It's from none other than Terry Simmons. This is coming after the break. Kimberly, I know that's one of your big fan, you know, one of your favorites, if you will. So we're going to go to this break. Talk about this cut, and maybe we can get into where you started, Dr. Javette, when it comes to understanding support or non-support, if you will, for family or friends when you initially start a business. So we'll be right back. For anybody out there listening, we will open up the phone line to let you get in as well. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you this about being in business. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Are you looking for a deep, meaningful relationship that eventually leads to marriage, but tired of swiping left on dating apps, tired of being ghosted, and tired of online relationship coaches without relationships themselves? Well, psychotherapist Monique Knight has the recipe to help you find your perfect match, and she brings you the Secret Sauce Relationship Bootcamp. With support from trained couples counselors, marriage and family therapists, this course will empower you to build meaningful relationships. This 8-week bootcamp offers a structured journey for singles to meet and interact as our team of experts guides you through topics like effective communication, conflict management, and intimacy.
Registration is now open for the second boot camp after the first one sold out in less than 2 weeks. The next boot camp starts on April 1st. Register at comprehensivefamilycare.org/SSB or call 404-585-7533. Again, that is 404-585-7533 for details. Remember, love is not just a matter of chance, it's a skill that can be developed.
So I've been having a lot of conversations this week with clients, with mentees, people that might seek my advice about leadership challenges or challenges in their businesses, and even young people that I may work with. Man, people really struggle with the concept of perfection. And I think it's like our upbringing, I think, contributes to that a lot because, you know, like in school, we're so caught up in grades. So, you know, if you got a 90%, you made an A. You know, if you got a 78%, you know, you made a C. And, you know, if you got a 60, you failed. You know, you got a repeat. And it doesn't work that way in the real world. Particularly if you're an entrepreneur and you're batting 60%, man, you winning. Success is built on the concept of failure, particularly for you entrepreneurs. And if you are waiting to perfect something before you launch it, or if you don't become comfortable with the emotional highs and lows and the financial losses and sometimes the public embarrassment that's associated with losing, then you can't win. You don't deserve to win. You cannot become dejected, you know, and demoralized because you came up with an idea, you put it out in the marketplace, but the marketplace didn't respond the way you thought it was going to respond. That's not your deal. Don't get me wrong, you got to do your due diligence. You got to do your research. You got to do your beta testing. You got to do all of that. But you can't be paralyzed by the possibility of failure. I could tell you much more stories about L's than I can about W's. But at the end of the day, that's what I signed up for. And that's what makes the wins all the more sweet.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you about this, about being in business? Special guest, Dr. Lene Javette, as well as Kimberly Fowler, as we hear a cut from none other than Terry Simmons. Claim to fame. We dialogue and connect is what we do best, and I was able to connect Terry with Kimberly. So if you will, Kimberly, I'll let you respond to what you're hearing, because the reality of our educational system is built on stratification with the grading, and if you will, but if you go into entrepreneurship, school typically doesn't fit true entrepreneurs very well, because to his point, there's no grades, or if you're used to being holding to being a straight A student, which means typically that you're going to be very good at possibly working for someone else, and that's not to degrade that, because the majority of us do work for someone else, myself included. So again, that's not to degrade, but it's just the opposite perspective on what it takes to be an entrepreneur. That's what I hear in Terry's cut, but interested in hearing your thoughts on what he had to say and entering this thing we call entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. I actually wanted to speak on the, you know, the clip that you actually just posted, you know, or, you know, played about him too. It was awesome. That's why I love Terry. But to your point about the schools, yeah, I tell people all the time, see, I mentor other business owners who are aspiring business owners who are coming from that employee, you know, transitioning from that employee to entrepreneur mindset. One of the things that we talk about is that schools do not teach you how to be producers. They teach you how to be consumers. They teach you how to fall in line. They teach you how to, you know, be, you know, work under someone, you know, to, you know, work under someone else's vision and, you know, kind of be task oriented and not production oriented. A lot of the schools don't really tell you how to, you know, you can take this skill and make it a business or solve a problem in the world, because that's what a business is just solving a problem. And that you can actually, you know, create a whole, a lifestyle around it. So, another thing about that, you know, to kind of go into that way, you know, something that Terry said is that the mindset that people go into business, or the perception that they have when they go into business, is that I'm going to be successful. Everybody is going to want what I have. Everybody is going to want my product. Everybody's going to want my service. But again, you go in business to solve a problem, and if the problem does not resonate with your family, your friends, and all of that, then you start to feel isolated. Then you start to feel rejected. You start to feel abandoned, and now you doubt yourself that you're not able to do it because you didn't go in with the proper mindset that I need to figure out, I need to solve a problem, and I got to find the people that I can solve the problem for. And it's a possibility that the first time I try to solve this problem, I'm not going to get it right, so I may fail. But knowing that failure is just data is going to help you propel to the next level.
No, I love it. As a matter of fact, let's transition right on that point, if you will, Dr. Javette, as she's highlighting, as she clearly said, business is simply, are you solving a problem, if you will, but she highlighted to your point prior to the break, the idea of that problem may not even be your family or friends' problem. That could be part of it, if you will, but you were introducing even the concept of, as she said, the isolation when your friends and family, you know, may not be your first supporters. It happens for some business owners, but that is not typically the case. So let's move right into the mental aspect of, as you said, you have a theory on why that is. So let's dig into that a little bit, if you will, Queen.
Awesome. So I heard this analogy for fail. You know, there's always an analogy for everything, fear and all this different stuff. But the one I heard for fail that Kimberly, you literally just tapped in on is called, it's a first attempt in learning, F-A-I-L, first attempt in learning. And I use that all the time. Now I'm like, oh, my God, that's exactly what a fail is. It's your first attempt in learning. Sometimes it's second and a third, but it's the fact that you took the initiative to try. So here's my analogy on the friends and family thing. So I believe, this is Dr. Lene Javette's belief. I didn't read this nowhere. This is just what I believe, that the reason why our friends and family do not initially support us when we first launch our business, besides the fact of what Kimberly said, they're not our customer, one of the reasons is they're too close to us. Your friends and your family, they know too much about you. They know if your car broke down. They know if your baby daddy is tripping. They know if you went to school and dropped out. They know your work history. They know your personal business. They just know too much. If you start stuff and you stop, if you try and you don't succeed, if you got bad dating, whatever it is, they know too much about you. So when you go to start a business, they are looking at you from the perspective of, is she gonna finish this? Is he gonna do this like he did school? Is he gonna bounce a check? Like they're judging you based on your whole life's experiences, and so they kind of take a hands-off approach to you. The reason why somebody in the street that does not know you will come up and support your business is because that's all they know. All they know is Kimberly does taxes and that she does them well. So it's easy for them to come up to her and be like, oh, can you help me with my taxes because I see your track record. It's easy for somebody to come up to me and be like, oh, well, can you help me with your business? Because that's all they see. They don't know nothing about my past and my history. So then what happens is as the world starts to love on you and support you, you start making business and you stay consistent, your family and friends start to see you and notice you and be like, oh, what you doing over there? How you doing that? And then they start to support you, but they have to first see that other people are supporting you. And I believe that is because they're just too close to us. They know too much of our business, whereas somebody off the street, they don't know anything about you except what you do, your expertise, how you show up. And if you meet the objective that you say that you'll meet. And so sometimes your family and friends will be your client customer based on the fact that they need your skill, but a lot of times they're still just trying to see if you are who you say you are, if you're going to do what you say you're going to do, and what are the other people around you say, do, believe, or feel about your business first.
No, absolutely. I would add to that, if you will. Again, I'd love to get into the psychology of it. And so, again, that can hurt if you, again, when you jump off into business and it seems like, you know, in a sense, your family and friends are supporting, especially if, to add to this conversation or add to this point that's kind of been made here, but especially if the problem you even solve is one that can help them. So then it becomes even more frustrating. But to your point, Lene, you know, your cousin, y'all may have taken baths together when y'all were cheap children. Like, they really know who you are, and it's not to, in a sense, let them off the hook, but it's harder for them to see you as something else. Like, even when people sometimes, when you think of like maybe like a athlete that's a superstar or whatever, and sometimes if we get to know the behind the scenes on some of these major athletes, you'll find out their family sometimes was the circle that kept them humble, because they knew them, you know, like you said, from taking a bath in the bath together, you know what I mean, from falling in the sand, skinning your knee, like you know them so well that they don't see you as the superstar that the world sees you. A lot of superstars and music and athletes, they love when they have a family around them, but it works that same way to your point in business. And here's the other part of it too, especially when you, as you said, fail, first attempt at learning. I love that. When you're first starting, the other aspect is, even as a business owner, if you mistakenly have that assumption that they will be the first to support you, the other part is you ain't that good at selling it at that point. So you're also saying, well, you're my family and friends, you should support me, but you're not even possibly that good at selling it. Or the other aspect is you don't sell like you would to a stranger. Like there's a professional approach that you take to a stranger, and sometimes because you assume that your family and friends will support you, you're a little lax in how you present it as well. So it's a two-way street in how that goes. And to your point, Lene, when you show that you are who you say you are, then sometimes they will flip. They may not be the first to support, but will become your biggest supporter when the world realizes, you know what, Lene, you know, you are that. Kim, you are that. Kim, any thoughts to add into this? Because I don't know if you experienced that as someone being, you know, doing taxes for 25 years. I don't know if you experienced that isolation from your family and friends not supporting at first. Any thoughts on that as well, Queen?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had to get over that hurdle early. you know, when your friends and family, your immediate friends and families don't believe that you are who you say you're projected to be, and they actually go to other people and use the same service that you offer as a business, that's like a dagger. Same household. I'm like, so I had to get over that early. I just had to realize, and that's where I started to understand that business is a problem, because my immediate family member, same household, okay, went to another professional. It was only because that person specialized in something that they needed help with, and my expertise level was not there yet. I didn't see that at the time, but that's how I began to reshape my perspective of what a business is. Like, wait a minute, he should have gone to somebody that can help solve his problem better than I can, and I have to let my ego down and say, you know what, I'm not the best person for this, and if I'm truly in business, I want them to go to someone who's better capable of serving them, even if it's not me, and even if I offer that same service. So I got that head on really, really quick, and that has helped me understand, get to know my customer, you know, wanting to understand people better, the psychology of people and their needs, and match my expertise and skills around their needs and just meet them where they are. You know, eventually I might be able to, you know, eventually I was able to help, you know, my family member, but at that time I couldn't. So it's not personal, you know, and a lot of times it's not personal. It's just that you may not just be that in their eyes at that moment.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I remember when I first really got heavy in this radio game or podcasting game. I started on radio before I got into quote-unquote podcasting. And so once I got the podcasting, I could see my numbers and everything like that. And I'd be like, dang, South Carolina ain't even in my top 10. I'm from South Carolina. That's why I grew up 18 years. You know, they top five now. They didn't creep their way up there. But back in the day, boy, I used to be hurt. Like, why nobody where I'm from listen to my show?
Right.
So I definitely have been through that. For all the callers out there, y'all can jump in and give us y'all stories or ask questions to both of our amazing business coaches, if you will. The number to get in is 646-787-1691. Listen closely. You do have to press 1 if you're trying to add on. Some people listen via the phone, so I don't just pull you up. You do have to press 1 if you are a first-time listener. All my regular listeners do know that. If you want to join in, you do have to press 1 to get on the show. With that said, I wanted to actually give y'all, Kimberly, I'm going to read to you the post from this queen has been on the show a couple of times, Shanayla. She's a part owner of A Few Wood Men. She posted a post on Facebook that was the catalyst for me to jump into this show, and I wanted to share her thoughts with both of you to get y'all thoughts on it, and I'll let you respond here, if you will. But these are just her thoughts that she just put out recently, and she's been in business, has more than one business or whatever, but if you would then definitely look them up. It's an amazing wood watches. They're amazing as well, by the way. But she said last week, nobody talks about the amount of grief that comes with business. You lose a lot. You risk a lot. And you change every day. It's scary. It's uncomfortable. And it's not fair. The loneliness, the financial stress, the mental anguish, the decision-making, responsibility, the discipline, the sacrifice, the bad deals, failed relationships, overpromises, the rejections, sometimes all within the same day. But somehow, you still do it, and for many, you figure out how to do it with grace. I just accidentally clicked off of it. Here we go. I got it. All right, I'll stop right there. She had a couple more words or whatever. I just kind of clicked off of it by accident. But Kimberly, you were kind of going down those lines about the personal changes, and you mentioned that in some of your posts this week, just personally what you're going through. So you can hear her personal journey as she was sharing, what it's like, but having to have all this grace to get through it, grace for herself, and she's still an amazing successful businesswoman, but she wanted to share it. And I said, you know what? Let's talk about this. So, Kimberly, your thoughts to hearing Shanayla's thoughts, if you will.
Yeah. So as you were naming all of the different, aspects of entrepreneurship, the dirty side, what we don't talk about, I mean, it just triggers a lot. It's an emotional roller coaster because entrepreneurship is a journey. It's an emotional journey. And that isn't widely discussed because, most people aren't ready to talk about, the highs of the lows as much as they are the highs. Like when you land a new client or you're making that sale, you automatically feel like this burst of energy. So you feel like, oh my God, I'm on top of the world. But what about that person who says no to you? And now you have to face that rejection. Now you have to say to yourself, well, is it me? And that's where that emotional journey comes in, and that self-reflection comes in. I believe if you choose to be an entrepreneur, you really have to understand that you're going to hold a mirror to yourself, and you're going to have to face every single trauma, every single mental challenge that you have, because it's going to test you. The financial strains of right now I'm going through something with an ex-business partner that has literally taken me to a point where I have to face who I am, and I have to face the world in a different light and understand that things that happen to me are not happening to me, they're happening for me. And as an entrepreneur, these are going to be things that are going to make me better whenever I go, to the next level. Like when I go from, six figures to seven figures to seven figures to eight figures, because each one has its operational challenges. You're going to have to deal with people. You're going to have to deal with a team. You're going to have to deal with their attitudes. You're going to have to understand that things that happen to you are not happening to you. They're happening for you. People lashing out at you, it's not about you. So you got to have a high level of emotional IQ. Like you can't just focus on your business skills. You really have to focus on your mental skills as well. Get a therapist. Talk to people. Write it down. Journal. Like, you're going to get decision fatigue. You're going to get, oh my God, I can just go on and on and on about this. But every single thing that you named, I could attest to that I just had literally in 1 year. Like I had to deal with the death of my mom, at the same time going through a relationship breakup, at the same time, facing financial challenges because of the ex-business partner. Like most people would just tap out. But again, I'm taking these things and I'm using them as lessons, not just in entrepreneurship, just to build me as a better person. So I have to figure out, how do I build my emotional intelligence? to be able to deal with these, you know, adversities one after another or at the same time, as you mentioned, because they can happen at the same time, and not lose my mind and not go into a mental breakdown. Like, we don't talk about these things, but they should be discussed because they happen to the best of us, to the most successful entrepreneurs, and I just think we just need to, you know, shed a light on it like we're doing here.
No, I love it. We actually got several callers that want to jump in, so let's start knocking out some of these callers. 225, last 3022, give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
What's going on, Montoya? This is Terry Simmons calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Oh, man, you know, I'm going to keep you on for as long as I'm going to steal you for the next hour and a half, man. Nah, I can't do that to you, but thank you for getting on this thing. What you got for us, King?
Man, you know I called to hijack the whole thing.
Hey, you can have it. I'll get off the show now if you want it. I'll keep it a beam with you. That's how serious you are in this business game. But go ahead, brother.
You already knew I had to call and support Kimberly. What's going on, lady?
Hey, this is my hero, y'all.
I'm glad to see y'all put this together because it's a very necessary conversation right now given the climate around entrepreneurship, and particularly the climate around African-American entrepreneurship, because obviously during the pandemic, there were a lot of businesses that skyrocketed, I would say almost artificially, because of what was going on in the world. And it may not have been either a sustainable business model or a sustainable product or service or whatever the case may have been. And so I see a lot of people that found success over the past few years that are literally faced with the dilemma of whether they continue down the path of entrepreneurship or go back to corporate America or whatever their, you know, profession was before they found success. And so I wanted Kim to talk a little bit about the aspects of the pivot, because obviously I have an intimate understanding of what she's going through right now, and have the utmost respect for how she's been able to withstand everything that she just described, but reimagine her business as opposed to, you know, going into defense mode. She's gone into offense, and she's figured out a new lane for herself as a coach and also, you know, for her company in terms of its, you know, products and services. So I want Kimberly to talk a little bit about, like, the process of the pivot.
No, that's dope. Go ahead, Kimberly.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so as he mentioned, so as I'm going through these challenges, I also realize that, again, things happen to you, I mean for you, not to you. So I also took a hard look at my business model. I took a hard look at the way that I was making decisions. I took a hard look at the people that I had surrounding me and supporting me in my business and why I even chose the type of people that I was choosing and what mind frame I was in, you know, or what, you know, what mind frame I was in when I was choosing to, you know, spend my money or invest my money or, you know, where types of products and services that I was actually offering. And I just had to do a whole why. Like, why am I doing everything that I'm doing? Why am I really truly offering this? And I had to come to the conclusion to say that I am operating out of fear. Like, that was my truth. I was operating my whole business out of what I thought or what I was seeing other people, how I was seeing other people operate their business, but that wasn't actually being true to me. I was I felt like, oh,
real
I need
quick,
to give
Kim,
everybody
real quick,
a
just
chance.
Real quick, and I'm sorry, I just want to interject that. How long do you feel like you were operating out of fear? Because you've been in business a long time. I just want to give a little context as you move into this pivot, if you will.
So all of my emotional traumas, I would say about 10 years. Total,
wow.
About 10 years. And then I actually physically found what I would look like success. They say when you get money and when you get a success, it just amplifies, you know, your weaknesses, and that's what happened. So I felt like I needed to overgive in order to get from people, and that's what I was projecting in my daily life and also in my business. I was overgiving. I was not making decisions from a strategic standpoint. So I had to say, you know what, you know, after the disaster happened, I had to just burn everything down, like tear everything down and take a step back and look at my business separate from who I am and what I do. This is the business. It needs to operate, you know. So what is it, you know, that I have that I can offer into the world and make it a model and make it something that's duplicable? And so I had to put all of those systems in place. I had to figure out that I am not my product. I am not the service that I do. I'm a coach, so I love to teach. So now I need to completely tear down, you know, the things that direction I've been going into and go into that direction. But this time I need to come from a place of authority. I need to make decisions not on emotions, but based on data, you know, the right questions, learning how to ask the right questions. I forgot the book that I read that taught me how to ask better questions. But since I started not even just asking better questions of other people, I had to ask better questions of myself. So as I started to get deeper with myself and increase my emotional intelligence, I said, you know what, let's go in a whole new different direction. So that's pretty much where the pivot started. But I just had to burn all the bridges. Everything that started, you know, before, I burned it down, and I'm just starting completely over.
Now, I love it. Dr. Javette, if you will, you have a very special doctor. We don't just call you doctor for any reason here. You have a doctorate specifically in this area, and so it's not just a doctorate in title, if you will. But if you will, highlight kind of specifically what your doctorate is in, because I would love to hear, as you listen to what Kimberly just talked about, the psychology of, because this is what you particularly help executives and other business owners with. So if you could highlight your doctorate and give us your thoughts in listening to her having, as she said, not tear everything down, but particularly herself down and think differently to be able to improve, mm-hmm. even though she had been in business for 10 years looking the part, but really had to change and pivot as Terry just asked and offered. Your thoughts, Dr. Javette.
First of all, let me just say, Kimberly is amazing. Like, I you know, because I get to know her personally. I didn't know any of those things were going on. And this is no shade, no tea to the black man, but the black woman is just phenomenal. how we carry life and turmoil and trauma and the stuff that's happening to us with grace. Because I've seen you over the last year, and I've hugged you over the last year, and I didn't know any of those things were going on with you. We got to check on our strong mm-hmm. friends. We definitely got to check on our strong friends. But I study psychological capital, which is, they call it the hero effect, because it's based on hope, efficacy, resilience, and optimism. And these four characteristics are malleable, which means that they can be taught. You can teach somebody how to have hope, how to be have efficacy, how to have resilience, how to have optimism. And so basically what Kimberly just talked about in the pivot is she had to call on all of those different things. She had to call on hope to make it through. She had to know that she was the purpose. She was the cause. She was the engine that was going to make it happen. That's the self-efficacy piece that we have as an entrepreneur. And then she was resilient. She said, not today, not on my watch. You know what I'm saying? She found a way to make it work. That pivot, people, I like what Terry said, profit in the pivot. People don't realize how important that pivot is, and it will knock some entrepreneurs down. It can knock the wind out of you if you don't know how to pivot, when to properly pivot, and what to pivot to, right? And that's where resilience comes in. And then the last one is optimism, because we've been talking a lot about that mental headspace. If you don't have an optimistic mindset where you can see past the negative bank account, past the trauma, past the bad deals, past the no sales, past the people telling you no, past the, your car getting repossessed, past you got to turn your Netflix, if you can't see past that, this entrepreneur game is not for you. It takes a while. So if we actually just use what Kimberly said, she's been in business 26 years. The last 10 or 10 of them, she was saying she was operating in fear. I would say even in fear, look at what she did. Like sometimes we look at fear as a bad thing, but fear can also push you, right? As a speaker, people don't know this about me, and I tell people all the time, I am an introvert. And I am shy. People don't get like, look at, yes, I am. Mm-hmm. Every single time I accept a speaking gig and I step on stage, I am scared. My heart is beating fast because it is not who I am as a person. When I get off stage, I got to go sit and be by myself for a minute because I just left it all on stage. I am shy. I am I stutter over my words, and so having to speak pushes me, and I do it even when I'm afraid. So sometimes fear is the thing that can push us, but we want to get to a place where we can operate authentically, which is what I think she was saying, is you don't want fear to be your driver, but I would still say do it afraid. Still do it. Mm-hmm. Don't let fear stop you, because you can still move forward.
No, it makes sense. Terry, if you will, let me get one quick thought. I got to get to these other callers as well, and I'll keep you on if you have time. As I love what Dr. Javette is saying here, do it afraid, but she also highlighted the pivot can break some people down. The thing that you always talk about, entrepreneurship, even though the media, social media pushes everybody to go into it, it's still not for everybody. And so this type of thing that Kimberly went through literally could break a lot of people down. And again, because it's not for everyone, I would like for you to just kind of highlight your perspective on what that even looks like before everybody jumps in. I don't know if I'm making sense with that, but it's kind of like we still have to be careful that, yeah, you can push through fear, but that doesn't mean you can be an entrepreneur, if I'm making sense with that. Go ahead, King.
Yeah, that's spot on. And I want to what Dr. Javette said about being an introvert but having to step outside of that comfort zone and be a socialite at times and be in the spotlight. I can absolutely identify with that. But to your point of your question, Montoya, my personal belief is that entrepreneurship is the most difficult vocation that anyone could pursue, because it is open to everyone, but the intricacies of the skill set that you need to have to be effective at it as an entrepreneur that is also an operator. Now, you know, I have these different categories that I put entrepreneurs in, and it's diverse. So if you're someone that is leveraging capital, then this may not apply. If you're someone that just is inventive and comes up with ideas, and then you license or sell those ideas to someone, then it may not apply. I'm talking about someone who is typically the types of businesses that we go into. We are practitioners that then turn those credentials and those skill sets into an actual business. And then once it outgrows us, then we try to scale it. And so the majority of the time, our motives for going into entrepreneurship are either somewhat selfish. So I want to own my time. I want creative autonomy. And I'm not trying to say that those aren't reasons to become an entrepreneur, but those reasons pale very quickly when you start experiencing the things that Kimberly and Dr. Javette were just speaking to. If money's the primary motivator, that will eventually not be able to, you know, fuel that engine. It has to be, in my opinion, first of all, that you want to solve a problem that is of a certain magnitude that even justifies going down that road, first and foremost. The second thing is that you have to ask yourself, do you have, you know, the skill set, and then also the business acumen. And I'm not trying to say that those things can't grow and improve over time, because they're constantly evolving. But I don't have the mechanical aptitude to be an engineer. There are some people that don't have the aptitude to become an entrepreneur. They just don't have the baseline for it. And we tell everyone that this is a vocation that is open to everyone. Well, yes, it's definitely open to everyone. So is, you know, law enforcement or going to become an educator, but doesn't mean that just because I can pass some coursework that that's what I need to be doing. So I think we have to, as a community, take a step back and understand that there are thousands of vehicles to financial wealth and building a financial legacy and generational wealth that are not entrepreneurial in nature. In fact, most millionaires probably are not entrepreneurs. They probably have taken more of a traditional, you know, leveraging their earnings, putting money in the right places over a long period of time, leveraging compound interest, and then they are 53 and they're like, oh, I'm worth $3 million. And so now I want to say this, and then I'll hush. I want the listeners to understand, when we throw around these 6- and 7-figure business figures as though it's an inevitable destination that businesses reach. And again, y'all that are listening, the ones on the call at least know that I'm a huge advocate for African-American female entrepreneurs, so this is not to disparage women in business. But I want the listeners to understand just how rare the people on this call are in terms of what they've achieved. So when Kimberly mm-hmm. says, well, I've got the six figures and I'm working to get to seven, the average gross revenue for an African-American female-owned business in 2024 is around $24,000 a year. That's gross, not net. And so when we hear someone say that they got six or seven figures, we need to understand the rarity and also the skill set, mm-hmm. the work ethic, the talent, the relationships, the risk that it took to get there. Because we're just throwing it around on social media,
right?
And it's just not.
It's a completely
unrealistic.
It's completely unrealistic.
Yes, it's not realistic
in how it'll be presented, and it becomes people's aims without understanding the reality. As you can imagine, I'm going to play some cuts from you as well, Terry. But thank you so much for that time. Let me go to a break, if you will. Come off the one and come back on if you ever want to jump back in, because we're going to play some more cuts by you, and I got to get to these other callers as well. But thank you. Definitely want to give you more time because you've been on this show plenty of times, and you always add an amazing 3 cents. So thank you for your time, King. We'll be right back. We'll get to the other callers coming out of the break. Well, all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
I went back, got my Guts in a Row K back, and took the contract, and I got sued. And I got sued for the suit, I think, was for like for $75,000. And we ended up settling. And I don't remember how much I'm allowed to talk about or not. We ended up settling. But I got sued. And I remember somebody saying, I was at a motivational speakers conference or what have you, probably about 3-4 years before that. And I remember somebody saying, he was kind of an a-hole, but he was rich, and, so I was listening. And he said, man, you're not in business until you get sued. It's like, welcome to the new world. If you're getting sued, then you know you're in business because you're a threat to somebody. And at that point, now you've got some real business that you can do. And so I remember when I got the letters from this person's lawyer, I was initially afraid because I'd never been thrust in that situation. And then I remembered those words, and I got so excited because I was like, wait a second. These people think I'm a threat. So whatever, lack of self-confidence or insecurity that I was holding on to, they clearly didn't believe that existed.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you this about being in business, as you hear a cut from speaking with Black Level member Rashad Howard. Actually, he was talking to Terry, who just called in. He was responding to Terry. We did a short series with one of our sponsors, Money Motivation, and we actually turned that into a quote-unquote mixtape for business owners, and that was one of the cuts that we put on, and I thought it was very poignant for this discussion, just in the sense of, again, going into business. You want to do business right. You want to be successful. We just kind of, if you will, laughed at the concept of six figures being easily accomplished in business, again, thrown around on social media way too often. But the other thing is, even in trying to do business right, no one ever tells you about, as you scale and get bigger, being sued is a real possibility in business, or something, again, what no one ever tells you. If you will, Kimberly, just some thoughts in hearing that cut, because to Lene's point, you have pivoted and you look amazing despite everything you've been through, but I'm pretty sure you can relate to that cut. Just wanted to get some of your comments before we get to the callers.
Oh, my God. I think you pulled out that cut specifically for me. I know you did. I don't care what you say. That is exactly what is happening. And to be honest with you, to his point, as far as being sued, like you look at when you get sued, when you get those letters in the paper, especially from a friend. I mean, when you get those letters in the mail, I'm sorry, especially from a friend, it's almost as if that confidence that you did not have at first, like he said, it gets attacked. You internalize it like, oh, my God, I am definitely a failure because I've messed up so bad that now someone feels that they need to sue me because I made a mistake. I had that dark hat over me for so long that I had made such a big mistake in business that I started to doubt myself as a business owner. Instead of looking at it as, no, somebody sees you as a threat. They're looking at you higher than, in a higher regard than you're even looking at yourself because mm-hmm. you have not dealt things you need to deal with to understand who you are and what you represent and what you are representing. I wasn't even authentically representing who I was confidently. I mean, I knew I could do the things. I could do all mm-hmm. the things. I could say what I needed to say. I could help other people. But internally, there was this lack of confidence that I could really pull it through because nobody in my family has done it or my friends aren't doing it. Or who am I to think that this girl from Zone 6 East Atlanta is going to sit here and save other tax professionals and become an incubator? Listen, so when I got sued, I felt like, yeah, this is justification, this is validation that I can't do this and I'm doing this wrong. But, again, I had to step back and see, no, this person feels that you can do it and that mm-hmm. you are a threat, so you need to keep that. So, yes, that is my life, current situation, yes.
Dr. DeVitt, your thoughts to that, and then we're going to bang callers out for the rest of this segment. Go ahead, Queen.
So speaking of the pivot, I kind of want to pivot a little bit, just a small bit.
But it
still deals with kind of what we're talking about. And I want to talk about, it's the business acumen piece that we don't talk about, which is kind of a little bit of what Kimberly is talking about, just a little bit. But Terry brought it up, and I want to talk about that piece because when we start talking about becoming an entrepreneur, one of the things that I see often is we don't do enough research on the industry or the business that we want to go into, so we don't understand it as well as we ought to, and that could take us down a wrong path. We can either start the wrong type of business. We can invest. I think Kimberly was talking about spending money in some of the wrong places. When I first started my business, I cashed out my 401k. I left with $50,000, and I was like, all right, I got a year's worth of money to help me get my business up and running. But I did not think about the fact that I have to live and I have to run the business. And so I was at my $50,000 in 6 months. And then I'm out here trying to figure out what to do. Some of that was to what Kimberly was saying. I was just spending bad. I was spending wrong. I invested $10,000 on a website, my very first website. And I don't know nothing about websites. I didn't know anything, the difference between a website designer and a website developer. So I lost money. Now, I made that money back 5 times because I learned how to do websites. But I hear from a lot of people who will start businesses and become entrepreneurs, kind of like what Terry was saying, it's not meant for everybody, but if it is meant for you, understand your business, understand what a partnership is, understand what contracts are, understand who you're going into business with, who you're choosing as a partner, what role each person is supposed to play, what skill set each person has, who's coming in with what that looks like, should the business go awry, who's going to have what, who's going to get what, like think about those things. Try to get the best understanding of your business and overall business, but specifically the business that you're going to go into and what all it entails, the softwares, the language, who does what, who your competitors are, what's being done right in the industry, what's being done wrong in the industry, what lane you want to take, what your unique value proposition is. Like there's these aspects of business that we don't talk about when we become an entrepreneur because we're just so happy and excited to be an entrepreneur. If you don't know, like Terry was saying, that most entrepreneurs are out here making about $25,000 a year. Like that's the average for a woman. For a man, it's 40, I think. It's on my website. I have the statistics for black men and black women. But these are real. It's not the glamour and the glitz that you see. There's real, I don't want to say trauma, but there are real aspects of being a business owner and an entrepreneur that is not discussed. And I feel like I believe that sometimes it feeds into some of the stereotypes that surround us as Black business owners. And I don't want to say it's not our fault. That's not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is a lot of times we're first-generation Black entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to figure this thing out by ourselves. We don't have a homegirl, homeboy, an aunt, an uncle, a friend to go to and say, what do I do about this business
mm-hmm.
situation? How can you help me? Can you give me some information, knowledge? So we're trying to figure it out by ourselves. But if we just spent a little bit more time with that business acumen and really understanding our business and partnerships and contracts and stuff like that, it will really help businesses go a lot further.
Now, we're going to play some cuts from Terry that talks about how to do exactly what you're talking about later in the show, and Terry wants to get back in as well. But let's go to 678, next last 3097. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
Hello?
Yep, you're live on the air. What's your name, where you're calling from, and give us your 3 cents.
All right, what's up, Montoya? This is Clive calling
in. Hey, what's up, brother?
What's going on? How you doing, ladies? It's been a great conversation. You guys have hit on a lot of points, so just jump into it. The first is I always say that, you know, entrepreneurship, as the man was saying, is harder anything you'll ever do, and I don't think that there's enough credit given because so many people profit off of the beginning entrepreneurs. Hey, get this six-figure course. Hey, buy this six-figure thing. We'll get you to six figures in 2 weeks, And because there's so much profit off of it, a lot of people just sell the idea that there's some kind of fast track or fast way to get to it to make it happen. A lot of times people don't really understand the amount, how hard it's going to be. And then the next thing I wanted to say was that most people get into business to make money. And what happens is a lot of times when you get into business just to make money, as the man said, you get tired, you wear down because the money, you're like, man, it's not even worth it because you're not seeing the money. You're not seeing all this money that's promised. But when you have something that's for impact, you're trying to solve, you really came into it because you saw a problem, you wanted to solve a problem, you're able to go through a lot of the things that happened before and you're a lot of the trauma, a lot of the problems, a lot of the things that happen inside of entrepreneurship, you're able to go through it because you're here to make a profit. And so that's why they don't tell us that, because they're trying to make a profit. But most people make their profit off of that.
I wanted to hear Dr. LeVay's thoughts to what you're saying, because I think you're making prevalent points. And the biggest thing I hear Clive pointing out is how people are capitalizing off of these fast track things, and people are literally making a lot of money who haven't proven themselves, and that is again a lot of money being made. Dr. LeVay, any thoughts on what Clive brought to the table?
Yeah, everybody's trying to hit that six figure realm, and so it is a big push. You know, how to get to six figures, how to get seven figures. I used to do that, but I've pivoted. I love the word pivot. I've pivoted to triple your revenue now. Because when I write somebody a strategy, I don't necessarily know where they are. Sometimes they come to me at 50,000. Okay, we'll write a strategy to triple it, so we'll get them to 150. I had a client that came to me. She was doing about $60,000 in revenue. She was like, I've never done 100. And I was like, all right, cool. We wrote the strategy. She did 117 the first month and then 239,000 the next month. So I don't go the six-figure route because everybody's business is different. Everybody's business model is different. People's contracts, how you make money. There's so many different things that go into whether somebody can really get you to six figures. So I like to look at it from, let's look at what you're doing right now, and then let's scale it, or let's grow it, or let's come up with a strategy to help you triple that. I do have a client who did $1 million in under 3 years. So it's just, it varies. There's no rhyme or reason why somebody does what, you know, can make a certain dollar amount versus somebody else, other than what I might say, effort, truly understanding who you serve, your target market, your marketing efforts. Those things do matter, your brand, those things do matter. But the caveat to that, and again, it depends on who you're talking to. You have some people who are doing six figures off an Instagram page with no website. There's no rhyme or reason sometimes.
No,
but
fair enough.
To that point, it shouldn't be so like I'm just gonna get you to six figures with no information.
Yeah, we got about a minute, Hello. Clive. I'll give you one final thought before we go to the top of our break. If you can give me a quick thought before you go. Thank you for the call this morning, brother.
Oh yeah, no problem. So exactly what you said was that there is no rhyme or reason. But I just don't want it to be the average or that's normal. That's the only mm-hmm. thing. Of course it can happen. Can somebody hit the lotto? Yes, a lot of people do. But it's not average for people to come into anything, Instagram or any, most people are on any of these platforms, any kind of business model. They don't. So just understanding that, yo, I'm taking a gamble, not even a risk, right? Because the chances of you being successful, if you don't have those prerequisite skills, if you don't come in with the knowledge, with the aptitude, with the partnership, with the know-how, with all those things, your chances of success are very, 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 very difficult. And just to be and that we can understand that when we come into this, and understanding that that the probabilities are very low because we don't have a lot of these things. As we said, we're first generation entrepreneurs.
No, I love it. Thank you for the thoughts. And I'll just even put the numbers that Terry and Lynae brought to the perspective. If you're hearing 25,000 or 40,000 is the average for the entrepreneur, if you're hearing that for the first time, the reality is the majority of entrepreneurs are solopreneurs, myself included, and specifically in our community, only about 5% of businesses even employ others. They may do a lot of contract work, but actually employment is a smaller number within the African-American community. I'm highlighting those numbers because in reality, a lot of us will get some time freedom, which I've added in my life by, in a sense, jumping out here to a degree. But a lot of times you're just replacing your salary. You're just basically, and I'm not using this to be negative, but it's a glorified job in the sense that you control your time, but you may just be replacing the money you are making in your industry. And a lot of times you can even make money by staying in your industry if this is not the place you should be based on skill set. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Hey, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses make $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies' gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, they still know it's me, because I look like money, smell like money.
24 years old, I get that, you know, we have founders of some of the world's biggest companies that started those companies in their early 20s. I get that. Those people are unicorns. They're phenoms. It's almost impossible to recreate that or to manufacture that. Most people need lived experience. And in business, a lot of times the best lived experiences that you can have is on somebody else's dime, as opposed to just trying to navigate this thing on your own. You know, I'll give you an example. You have somebody that will go start a company, know very little about how to make the company successful, and as a result of that lack of information and that lack of experience, they'll go ask someone that has the experience to be their mentor to help them build that business. Instead of saying, let me go work for this person, now I'm making money and getting the mentoring is baked in. See what I'm saying? Like anybody that's on my team is indirectly getting mentored, whether we doing it one-on-one or whether we just in a team setting or just from observing whatever it is that we're doing.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you this about being in business? As we hear a cut from Terry Simmons, a guy, that brother on the line, I'm going to jump him right back in here and let him give his first thoughts to hearing himself. He was telling me he don't know where I get all these cuts from, but I follow him that much, so I got him. But if you will, King, I think Lynae and yourself were moving, as she said, the business acumen, the skill set required to be in this space, and you're highlighting a beautiful way to get the skill set, even if you eventually want to become a top entrepreneur, a top business person, one of the best ways to do it is actually work in your field under someone else. So if you will, Terry, any more thoughts on that cut? And I'm going to go to Dr. Javette, and then we'll get to another call.
Absolutely. And before I address that, I want to briefly touch on something that will button up the previous segment. And again, with having an intimate understanding of what Kimberly's going through and mm-hmm. what Doctor said resonates so much, it is very important if anyone's listening or even people that have existing businesses that may be doing, you know, relatively well, most successful businesses are partnerships. It's very difficult to build something substantial by yourself. However, in our communities, we do not understand the importance of partnership agreements and operating agreements. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is someone that you may work with at your job, your cousin, your sister, a best friend, someone you went to college with, maybe you guys have a complementary skill set, you have a similar interest, and you say, hey, we should do this thing together. You put in your sweat equity. I put in mine, we bring our respective relationships to the table, some capital and so on and so forth. And then what happens is that as that business begins to grow and in most cases morph into something that you don't even recognize relative to what it started out being, now everybody thinks that they put in 50% of the sweat equity in the capital, in the relationships, in the mm-hmm. ideas. And it simply doesn't work that way. Someone is most certainly more valuable to the business than someone else. But when it's implied on the front side that it's a 50-50 split, it's very difficult to go back and reconcile that when someone is recouping more than what they are reasonably entitled to, because it actually debilitates the business. Like if you and someone else start a business and let's just say, you know, each of you put up 10 grand and within 2 years that business is doing a couple million dollars, but you have one partner that is the face of the business. They're the mm-hmm. innovator, they're the administrator, they're the leader, mm-hmm. they're the ones that are making it go day to day, but this other person is still entitled to 50% of the profits, then now we're stealing from the business and crippling the business long term. And it happens so often. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot easier to have those conversations before, you know, all of the revenue is in front of you and the perceived success is shared. It's a lot easier to have that conversation on the front side than it is on the back side.
Let me ask you a question about that. Yeah, before you go into this next part specifically, again, because we want to tell people what they haven't heard. So you say it's easier, but what does that even look like? You know, for example, me and you are friends or whatever, and let's say we would have done it the way people could typically do it, right? We both put in our 10,000, and we kind of just, like you said, it's implied. What does it look like? Who should we talk to? I'm pretty sure you would say a lawyer, but even if you say, if I go get an attorney, I still don't know what to say. Does that make sense? So what does it look like
yeah.
to have that conversation, if you will? Let's give them those details as well, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Excellent question, by the way. Put it aside. Because a lot of times the least significant thing that someone is putting up for a business is money. Money is very rarely the most important asset. It's usually fifth, sixth, seventh on the list. When you start weighing credentials, when you start weighing who's going to put in the most sweat equity, meaning on a day-to-day basis, who's going to be the key holder, who's coming in, disarming the alarm, managing the employees if that's a part of it, dealing with the vendors, you know, who's signing their name on the dotted line for the lease, all of those things. So you have to break it down into operational categories because mm-hmm. even though it may only be two of you from the inception of the business, you're managing across 17 different categories. Like one of you is responsible for administrative, one of you is responsible mm-hmm. for marketing, someone's the primary salesperson, someone's mm-hmm. the primary business development person, someone understands the intricacies of the actual business that you're in. And so you have to break that down and make a best attempt at deciding what's fair to each individual and what's fair to the business in terms of how that breaks down. A lot of times what happens is that money is the missing piece. And so we assign a value to it that is disproportionate to what it actually mm-hmm. is. Because I may be the one that's the chef, for example. I went to culinary arts school. I didn't, but I'm hypothetically. Mm-hmm. Went to culinary arts school. I have worked in some of the most prestigious restaurants and hotels across the world. I started this catering business. I got a food truck. It's doing reasonably well. I got an idea for a restaurant. The build-out's going to cost about $300,000, and I only got 100 of it. So mm-hmm. then the person that's putting up the other 200, we think that they should be 50% of the business. That's mm-hmm. a cultural thing. That's not how business actually works. Because there are different ways for that person to recoup their money, and it doesn't have to be into perpetuity. But we're thinking, well, they're helping me get it off the ground, so mm-hmm. they're just entitled to 50% of the profits. And that may look good because you're like, well, where the heck else am I going to get the $200,000? A traditional bank is not going to lend it to me. SBA mm-hmm. doing it. I don't have anybody in my family. But what happens is it just ends up being a loan that has an immeasurable interest rate that you can never
exactly.
pay off. Is what that ends up being.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
We have to look at the core functions of a business and decide who is actually doing this stuff on a daily basis and what does that mean operationally. Then we figure out how we want to appraise any financial investment or any intellectual property or creative property that someone may be contributing.
No, that's major. I'm going to get Dr. Javed in here. I know we can, you know, because we don't have to necessarily get back to the cut, if you will, because this is, again, this is what we want to do is just let people hear these thoughts and think about these things differently. Dr. Javed, any experience with some of what Terry's talking about? I know you help a lot of entrepreneurs, and maybe some of them have, to his point, got into some partnerships without doing that on the front end. So I don't know if you've experienced that or seen that, but any thoughts about what we're talking about now? Again, I think this is the stuff that people don't hear enough of. Go ahead, Queen.
No, I mean, listen, I think you hit it like beautifully, hit the nail on the head. I like to be transparent, and I'll say I was a bad partner. My very first partnership deal, I was a horrible partner. I didn't know enough about what we were doing. We were doing a 3-day event, and I had my ideas and concepts, and she had been doing events. And so I was like, yeah, let's partner, let's do it. And so she had this idea and concept, and I was like, okay, I want to do this, and I want to do this. She was like, oh, if we do that, it's going to, you know, it can have repercussions. And I was like, yeah, but I still want to do it. And I just started going off way left on my own concepts and ideas, and that's costing us $17,000 when it shouldn't have cost us anything. Because I didn't know, I wasn't a good partner, and it messed up a good friendship too, if I'm being honest. And so from that situation, I've learned how to be a better partner. I definitely do contracts. I make sure that myself and the other person better understand what we're both bringing to the table. We know what our investment should be. We know what the goal is. I've become a better listener because of it. Luckily, the friendship has come back and we've worked with each other since
then.
Oh,
wow.
Yes, we have, and she's an amazing person. She actually flew me out to
get
an event.
She is an amazing person.
You
know, we $17,000. We might it might be on site for life. I'm just saying, she is an amazing person. Man. I mean, that must say something about you that she forgave you too. So I'll give you some credit here too. But go ahead, Queen. I'm just saying.
It was crazy. She didn't even come to the event. She was like, it doesn't make sense. We've already spent all this money. I'm not even coming. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I get it. But it was a learning experience. I'll never have that experience again. Not just myself. None of my clients will ever have that experience because I talk about that and how just important it is. If entrepreneurs really just talk about the money they lost to get to where they are, the experiences that they've had, the relationships that they've broken, like what Kimberly was saying, the downside, man, the downs is down, but we only glorify the ups. And some of the downs, if we talked about them more, it would save more people in business. If we talked about contracts, like even just in our community, again, no shade, no tea, but we have to have a better understanding of contracts. We do a lot of business on a handshake and I got you, and we don't pull out a contract. Sometimes when I pull out a contract and somebody, they're like, what's that for? Oh, do we need that? Hell yes, we do. This is to protect you and me. Like, this is not just for me. I want to make sure you're protected too. And a lot of misunderstandings and conversations could be had if we just had a contract, especially if you read it, because it'll make you be like, well, what does this mean? Well, who gets that? Well, who does that? Oh, well, who's responsible? It will make you have to flesh out the details a little bit better so that you better understand what you're really doing. And she was, way gracious because she didn't have to give me the money. I'm the one who made all these choices and decisions and got us to this place, but she did. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she was a great partner. She was a great partner. You know, like, I sucked, but I'm a much better, stronger collaborator, partner, a person who uses contracts, a person who makes sure that both parties understand what's happening, what's going on. I over-communicate at this point. But you have to go through some things to get there, and I wish we talked about it more so that people didn't have to go through it.
Nah, well, that's what we're trying to do some of this now, have this conversation. And you were built for entrepreneurship because you absolutely learned from it, because that moment could have kept y'all bitter. Again, because I'm pretty sure as great as a partner she was at the time, you probably didn't see that she had done, you probably feel like she'd done everything right, if you will, you know, to agree. That's just our perspectives. But you could have also walked away and kind of held your ground and not learn from it, which, again, those are, in a sense, the people who are not built to be in this space, if you will, and not just to harp on them, but it's just being realistic about what this game looks like. We're up against the break, 619-334. We will get to you coming out of the break. We'll be right back. All I ask is that you think. Are you looking for a deep, meaningful relationship that eventually leads to marriage, but tired of swiping left on dating apps? Tired of being ghosted and tired of online relationship coaches without relationships themselves? Well, psychotherapist Monique Knight has the recipe to help you find your perfect match, and she brings you the Secret Sauce Relationship Bootcamp. With support from trained couples counselors, marriage and family therapists, this course will empower you to build meaningful relationships. This 8-week bootcamp offers a structured journey for singles to meet and interact as our team of experts guides you through topics like effective communication, conflict management, and intimacy. Registration is now open for the second boot camp after the first one sold out in less than 2 weeks. The next boot camp starts on April 1st. Register at comprehensivefamilycare.org/SSB or call 404-585-7533. Again, that is 404-585-7533 for details. Remember, love is not just a matter of chance, it's a skill that can be developed.
Everybody get paid before the boss. If you work for the right person, think about it. The vendor's gonna get paid because you ain't bringing the inventory out in without paying them. You got a brick and mortar location, you paying that lease, you paying the utilities, you paying for the security system, you paying for the internet access, you gonna pay your liability insurance. Some people that may be going after government contracts, you gotta pay that, you gotta pay your workers' comp policy. All that's getting paid. If you advertising and marketing, that's getting paid. Whatever contractors that you got working for you, our vendors, they're getting paid. If you got employees, they're getting paid. You have to build the capacity to be able to take home that 6 or 7 figure salary without debilitating the business. That's the reason why it confuses me when people say they got a 6-figure business, but then they also say they got a 6-figure income. How? So you're stealing from the business, but you're stealing from yourself. Because if you're paying yourself $150 and the business does $500,000, you probably need to paying yourself $70, and the other $80 needs to be reinvested into the company. A lot of people that's trying to figure out how to start are trying to figure out how to get unstuck. They really need to be extending their time and talents to someone else that's already where they want to be. And they can literally be making money and learning the blueprint while they're making the money. And then at an opportune moment, they can break away and go do their own thing. That's really what needs to be happening.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you about this? Why no one ever tells you this about being in business? And, of course, this can be a lot of things. Again, another cut from Terry Simmons. And the this on this cut is specifically, the boss gets paid last. So if you've never thought about it, or you've always, in a sense, worked for others, again, beautiful thing, as Terry said earlier, more millionaires come out of that. It's only 11% of Americans that are full-time entrepreneurs, just to give another context as far as information and stats go. But with that said, the boss get pays last. Kimberly, if you will, talk about that, not only from the fact that you understand it by being an entrepreneur yourself, but you are a tax expert. And so this is also something that you understand intimately, more so than even the average business owner or entrepreneur, because you worry about the back end, the taxes, Uncle Sam going to get their money, and most people don't prepare for that as well. So talk about the boss getting paid last, because people rarely hear that. Go ahead, Queen.
Well, I have a different aspect on that because I read about getting paid more. You know, I don't feel, I read a book called Profit First. And if you read that book, then it tells you that you need to pay yourself first. But, you know, but I get what you're saying. But as far as the responsibilities of the business need to be paid. Now, the problem comes in people don't know what the responsibilities are. So that is when part of what you need to know when you're going into business is not just, you know, what the business structure is, you know, how many, you know, what your graphics are going to look like and how many products you're going to, you know, put into inventory or what, all of that is important, but nobody talks about you need to understand your numbers. If you are not profiting or you don't know that you're profiting at the end of the month, you need to look at you need to be able to understand how to read the data in your numbers because your numbers tell the story of your business. You are able to see what's not, you know, what products or services are generating the most revenue. You're able to see what, you know, expenses you probably are, you know, spending too much on is not giving you a healthy ROI, where you need to cut back on, what you need to do differently next month. Just because you may be in the negative 1 month, that is information for you. And new entrepreneurs need to understand that as a business owner, that is a non-negotiable. Your numbers, knowing your numbers is a non-negotiable, and you need to be able to read a profit and loss so that you are able to see how much you're able to pay yourself if you are, you know, at the end of the month and where you need to, you know, possibly invest less, what marketing, you know, if you're posting somewhere or if you're spending a lot of marketing dollars, what's giving you the best return on the marketing, like your numbers tell you all of that. So please, when you're investing, you know, you're just starting a business, figure out a way to know your numbers. Like, that is a non-negotiable, right? You just can't. You have to know, you know, what you need to be spending, you know, based upon the business, because like Lynae said, every business is different. Every business model is different. Some people are more customer-facing. Some people don't have to face their client at all. Some people are, you know, they just have an idea and they resell the license to it. So, you know, it's not as time-consuming. But you still have to understand what business you're in and what you need to invest the most in so that you can pay yourself something that's reasonable and something that's livable. Right? You don't just want to say, oh, I got a lot of, you know, look at your bank account and say, I got $10,000 in my bank account. That doesn't mean you can pay yourself $10,000 that month. So just know your numbers and understand and know how to interpret the numbers.
What do you recommend? I'm going to go to a caller after this. How do you recommend an entrepreneur even figure that out? Because quite often a lot of businesses survive and they, in a sense, never know their number. I've been guilty of this myself, if you will, or whatever. You're bringing enough of revenue to take care of your bills and things of that nature, but you don't know your number. So you, in a sense, stay in business because you do bring in enough. But where do you even go learn that at, if you will, real quick, and then we're going to go to a call?
I would say, you can actually, you know, some people shy away from getting an accountant or a CPA or whatever it is in the early stage of businesses because they don't feel like they make enough. But whether you know it or not, you can call a CPA or an accountant or, you know, or maybe even a tax professional if they're good at, you know, data analysis to just ask them for an hour of their time to go over your numbers with you. Like, I'm assuming that you know, that's it. Like, how much do you charge for an hour to go over my numbers with me and explain to me what I should be looking for, you know, and the trends in my numbers or, you know, help understand my, whatever that may be. You don't have to, if you can't afford it or feel that you can't afford it, you don't have to get on a retainer. Just ask them for 30 minutes. How much is 30 minutes of your time? How much is an hour of your time? Or can I, whatever that may look like. It's about building relationships, like Terry said.
No, I love it. Or you can become a member of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, and we got those accountants who do it at discounts for our other members. So just throwing that out. I like that idea. I didn't know you was going to throw me an alley, but I'll take it. I'll take it, Kim. Not me personally, but again, we got the experts in the community club. Let's go to 619, last 3334. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. What you got for us? Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Montoya. This is Donald Atchison out of San Diego. How you doing?
Hey, man, glad to get you in. You on that West Coast, 3 hours behind, so thank you. Well, you always get up early, so this is nothing new for you, but thank you for jumping in on this thing. What you got for us, King?
Well, I got a couple of things. One of the things that I learned when it comes down to entrepreneurship is just because you have a seven-figure business doesn't mean you're succeeding, because I did seven figures for 20 years. And when I came across my first real bump, which was divorce, I realized how much I didn't know about business. I also realized how important it is to choose that my best partners have been the people that I've married, and how important it is to choose going in the right person, because a lot of people think, you know, you may give up half, but that's not necessarily how it's going to happen. It didn't happen like that for me. I was in court for 3 years and paid so much money to attorneys that when there was something left to give, I got a house and $50,000. And my wife saddled me with the debt and walked away with a few million. That was the first loss. And that was when I started to understand. I didn't really understand business. I didn't understand what business was or what it was to really succeed, because once you succeed and you lose it, doesn't mean you're going to make it again. Doesn't matter how much experience you have. Sometimes when your train passes, it just passes. I got blessed and I made it again, but I discovered lawsuits, getting sued and things like that, not having myself fully protected, fully insulated. So once again, I'm thinking that I'm that entrepreneur. I'm in the seven-figure range again. But as soon as these lawsuits start coming in, I start to realize that I'm completely defenseless. So I learned that partners are important, who you choose as far as your mate, especially if she's going to be in the business. And then protecting yourself is critical. And in getting those lawsuits and taking losses again, I start to go through feeling embarrassed, feeling inadequate, things like that, not thinking that I can do it or that I can cut it, and then just feeling embarrassed with what people are going to say or saying about you because of those losses. That's a hard thing to recover from, especially when you might have, you know, certain type of ego based off of your successes, and then you feel that you have a story to tell, but in trying to tell your story, you create a very public mess. So I've learned that in entrepreneurship, there's a lot of things that's not talked about simply because people just don't talk about it or they're not thinking about it, but there's a lot of nastiness on the backside as well. I don't have a seven-figure income today. I have a high six-figure income, but my net worth is greater because of how I've structured my and how solid I am. So I can look at something and I can close a deal. But I've transitioned from being an entrepreneur to a business owner. And it took me 30-something years to do that, and it took a lot of losses to do that. And I have a lot of friends that are entrepreneurs and business owners, and they don't have the income that I have. Like, they're 30,000, 40,000, 50,000 strong a year, and that's just where they are. I'm just one of the blessed ones because of certain things that I've had take place in my life and kind of who I am. I have a different type of income. But I can tell you that one of the things the brother said about the internships are working for people, that's a big one right there. Another one there, I make most of my profits off of not paying taxes. I haven't paid taxes since I was in the United States Marine Corps in 1992. And that's a lot of profit, not paying taxes. And that's where I make the majority of my money. And so I think that some of the things entrepreneurs can learn are from tax structures, how you pay the minimum amount of taxes, and then not being so greedy and wanting to have that $150,000 income, personal income. Give it back into the business, reinvest, because that's where you're going to avoid and then pass off and kick the can down when it comes down to taxes, then your structure and what you invest in it. That's just my 10 cents for today. I appreciate you, brother.
Nah, I appreciate you for waking up early and supporting the show. I appreciate you again for a brilliant 3 cents. Appreciate you, brother. Let me go to another caller. Let's keep running. We've got to get one in before this next break. 614, last 3857. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion question.
Y'all know that I was not going to allow y'all to get on this show with Terry and Dr. Jevitt without me. Come on, now.
Is that the way?
I don't even really have nothing to say. I don't really have nothing to add. I just want to be on the show. I'm jealous.
Hey, I'm with it. Hey, I appreciate you. I'm going to the next caller. That's a great call, bro.
Let me drop up there. I've been an entrepreneur. I'm 47 years old, and I've only had two jobs, and they only and both jobs consecutive last 2 years total. So I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, and this is all I know. And I'm going to tell you everything I heard from the first hour and a half to even now what this last guy is talking about, I've experienced all of it. I experienced the partners. I've experienced the lawsuits. I'm in a business that does a lot of predominantly white business. And one thing about that, when you piss a white customer off, over their dead body, they'll do everything they can to destroy you and your life. So they get more vicious than you can ever imagine, and then you become harder. I make the business that we own make millions of dollars. I've taken too much out of the money and spent too much. There's been times when I gave the business too much money, and I didn't do anything for myself personal. So I had a big, huge run. Everything was great, and I got nothing back from the whole thing. So what I'm learning now, I'm on my third pivot. From what I heard Dr. Javette say and Terry, I'm on my third pivot, I think. And now I'm starting to learn it's understanding and learning systems and operations, but also where profit first comes in, my personal life is more important than any of this. So I've been heavily focusing on what investments I'm buying. You know, the business is a tool to turn some cash, but I'm taking that cash and I'm throwing it to other places and I'm starting to invest in the market. I'm looking at property. I'm looking at other things to keep this money turning because the business is always going to have its cycle. You're going to have up downs. You're going to have times when you mean six figures in the bank account, and you're going to have times when you wake up and you're negative 15,000. So it's just a lot. There's a lot of emotional roller coaster that comes with this and everything you guys spoke of. I mean, even from the family aspect, you mean your family not doing business with you, your neighbor, you tell them what your neighbor does and they call the competitor and it's like, damn, you didn't see me right here. All of that I've experienced, but I'll let you guys go from there.
Nah, I love it, man. I got to go to this break, man. Great call as always. Thank you for supporting as always. We'll be right back. We're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show where all I ask.
Get off the internet and get intellectual in real life at the smartest event in the city, the Mental Dialogue Live Experience, every third Friday of the month at Urban Grind Coffee Shop. Come dialogue on issues of race, sex, business and culture, and meet professionals and creators all in one place. Dialogue and connect is what we do best. The Mental Dialogue Live Experience is smart, fun, and organic networking on another level. Who can we connect you to help you progress in your life? For more info and updates, please visit mentaldialogue.com. We are much better with you than we are without you.
There's a chapter on touching things one time. Touch it once. And I found that there was a lot of things I was touching multiple times. And that's just sucking time where I can be out getting more sales, getting more clients. So I think no matter where you are in the business, but especially if you're someone that's trying to take it from six figures to seven figures, like I'm in the process of doing right now, trying to go from six-figure business to seven-figure business, it's all going to be about systems. Is there a repeatable process that your customers or your clients, whatever, that they experience? How do you make that process so that it's easy and repeatable and less thinking involved, and so you can spend more time working on the business and being a thought leader and being the entrepreneur and coming up with new strategies and new ways and spending less time in the business opening new accounts. So, yeah, my answer would be systems, hands down.
Now, that's a great answer. Let me jump in and ask a quick question. Either one of you can kind of answer it in reference to the systems. So I definitely hear of business owners here in Atlanta that are kind of trying to figure that out. In a sense, is there particular people that you, in a sense, go to? Let's say you're the visionary and creating systems is not your strength. Who do y'all typically look for to help assist? Is it like organizational managers or what? Who are you looking for if that's not your strength? Because that's kind of my scenario in my business as well. Like, who do I find to help me with that as the visionary versus somebody that's able to set those systems up to help me? Who do y'all look for?
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick and just tell you, that's what I hired my business coach for. I mean, that's how he was recommended to me from another business coach that I work with. And when I was talking about the problems I was having, he said, you've got systems issues. Let me get you with a guy that will help you set up systems. And that's what he did. I mean, there's things that happen now inside my business that never happened 2 years ago. And it's almost plug and play. Like, I mean, and everyone gets the same high touch, high class experience, but it's just laid out. And my assistant, actually, matter of fact, I could fire my assistant tomorrow. I wouldn't do that, but I could lose my, let's say she takes another job or decides she wants to go start her own business. I could plug and play someone with minimal training as long as they have a certain, you know, level of education and, you know, that sort of thing. And they can understand, they understand certain parts of business. I can plug and play. All I do is here, follow the system. So yeah, I think it's a.
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you this about being in business? Special guest, Dr. Lene DeVette and tax coach Kimberly Fowler. Lene, you absolutely been coaching people for a long time. As you hear another cut from our Money Motivation series, brother by the name of Johannes Harrison talking about the business coach was the key for him getting his system. So thought it was ideal to have both of you kind of speak to entrepreneurs who may out in a sense be out there plugging along, chugging along, if you will, in a conversation of when to even pick or use someone like yourself, or how do you avoid, like Clive was talking about, the people that are just kind of quick sell you something. How does someone find you to help them monetize, which is your specialization? How do they find you, and when should they seek you, if that makes sense?
Oh, that's such a good question. The easy answer is as soon as you realize you need us. That's the easy answer, right? As soon as you realize you need us. However, you may not know you may not know when you need us, right? So there are a variety of different coaches that do various different things. You have coaches that are specific in the startup process, and they're going to help you flush out and develop your concept or idea. They're going to talk to you about the different softwares, the programs, and their whole goal is to help you get up and running and get started. You have other coaches that are like, yeah, I don't really want to deal with the startup. I want my clients to kind of already have their business up and running, and they're probably looking to pivot or shift. And that could be to get to the six-figure mark, because your startup is kind of 0 to 50, and then you have some coaches that are like, I'm going to help you get to six figures, but you should probably be making some money, at least 50 to 60,000, so that they can help you to get to six figures, because that's a different type of a coaching process. Then you have coaches for people who are over six figures, so you already are doing six figures, but you're looking to get to the seven-figure mark. So there's a variety of different types of coaches that do a variety of different types of things, and one of the things that I tell people is, there is nothing new under the sun. So there's nothing new under the sun. How it is presented to you, who is saying it to you, the way that they dissect it so that you can understand it, their personality, those are the things that will change from coach to coach. And that's what you're looking for. Who's going to coach me in a manner with which I will be successful? Because there are a lot of coaches out here. Everybody's not good. Everybody's not really out here to help you be good. Some folks are just out here to make their money. So you want to find a coach who, A, understands where you are, B, can communicate with you and talk to you in a manner with which you can accept it, hear it, execute and implement and run with it, and then C, that has some results. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's some coaches out here that be playing in your face. They don't have the results. They don't do what they say they're going to do. There's a lot of people out here taking people's money and not giving them any results for that. So I always like to tell people, look at their track record. I used to say, I'm throwing myself under the bus. I used to say, look at the coach. But I don't say that as much anymore. Now I say, look at the client. Look at their client success. Because if you look at me, I'm so busy. I can coach you on certain things like social media and stuff like that. But if somebody went to look at my social media, they'd be like, well, how come? I'm old school. Do as I say, not as I do, which is not always the best way to work. I have my team helping my ministry in this area, because I do want to be more of a do as I do versus do as I say. But I coach. I'm so intricate with strategy and being behind the scenes and helping clients. I have so much referral business, mostly because I've been in school the last 5 years. So I've been in school for the last 5 years, so a lot of my business has come from referrals. I didn't really have to be in the front. But it's that those systems piece is very important because I've been able to go to school, get my PhD, raise a son as a single parent, and help my clients for the last 5 years, and I've made the most money I've ever made in the last 5 years.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And that's based on systems and automation. So that's an important part, but having a coach that can help you utilize those things, monetize those things, systematize those things, automate those things, it's super important. But it's also important, what I want the takeaway to be of this whole piece is finding the right coach for the stage that you're in.
Well, that makes sense. Kimberly, again, you've been doing taxes, if you will, for, as you said, 26 years. And if I think I understand, being able to, again, I'll take the claim of fame of, hooking you and Terry up, if you will, connecting. That's what I do is connect people. But in that sense, I think part of what you figured out in part of your pivot was, you got all this skill set, but you needed to be coaching others. Like that was kind of something that you pivoted into and you're damn good at it. So your thoughts at just being in the space and, if you will, just add, in a sense, the tax piece that our caller, Donald Esselstyn, talked about in the sense of how he makes so much money from being able to have his stuff structured well. Again, that's what I think, if I think I'm right, you coach people with that as well. So just if you could talk about that a little bit, if you will, Queen.
Yeah, I'll be really quick because it's tax season for me. I got about three people in the office right now waiting on me. I'm like, okay. So I'm going to make it really, really quick. So to the point of the coaching, the coaching is of finding a coach that's, and also the systems is a really good conversation. The reason why I pivoted into coaching other tax professionals is because I didn't have a system. I didn't have a rhyme or reason a disciplined approach as to how I actually serve my customers. So as I told you, the more and more I got to understand that I'm in business to solve a problem, I realized that most newer entrepreneurs don't start out from that viewpoint that, okay, who am I solving this problem for? What am I, what problem am I solving and how will I solve this problem? When it comes to systems and automations and things like that, it sounds good, but if you don't have an idea of who you need to serve and why you're serving them and you don't have an outcome and an offer and a transformation that you provide to them and you have that documented in a process, you're gonna have a hard time hiring people and understanding who needs to help you because you don't really understand your entire business model. You don't understand how you're going to present it to the world. You don't understand how you're going to monetize on it. And, so what you're doing is just kind of all over the place. So as I realized that was my problem, I got into business coaching to shorten that learning curve or help shorten that learning curve for other tax professionals. But it really can go towards other service-based businesses. You have to know what problem that you're solving and how you're going to solve it so that you know what coaches that you can align yourself with, so that you know what systems you need to pay for, so that you know what team members you need to bring on first, because there's a system to even hiring people. Like if you're a service-based business owner and you're trying to get to that $0 to $100,000, your primary focus is making sales and building relationships. But in order for you to make sales, you got to understand who you're serving, because again, sales is serving. So you need to be out there, building those relationships, talking to people. But the first person you got to hire is somebody to handle your calendar. But if you try to go out there and get all those systems and pay for all these expensive gadgets and things like that, and you don't even have a verified way that you're making your sale, it's just not going to make sense. So back, circling back to the point, I became a business coach because I wanted to help, put that in order for other service-based entrepreneurs now, but specifically tax professionals, because that is my craft. And as far as making the money, I feel like the way that we in entrepreneurship, I found out that the way that we actually think about money, I had to rebuild my relationship of how about money. You know, my mindset about money. We are taught in school, of course, or in society to make money and then spend the money, but not that second layer, that second, you know, avenue that needs to be really, really focused on is you make money. You know, you generate money, you invest, you know, you invest the money, and then you live off of the money that you're investing. But the investing can be investing in your business, investing in, you know, whatever instrument that you feel is going to make you some, you know, some type of return, but it has to be strategic. So, you know, in your business, most people want to, you know, go ahead and, oh, again, back to that, you know, I got $10,000 in my bank account. Oh, I can spend this. This is dispensable. But you need to be figuring out a way to reinvest that so that you can make more money, additional money, and not just look at what you have and just think that, oh, now you're okay because and you have, a, you know, because that can be going, if you're not protecting that money in any type of way, it can be gone in an instant. So that's what I have to say about that part.
No, I love it. We are up against another break. I'll highlight that Kimberly is my tax person for years, so I'm glad that she's out and pivoted to coaching, but she did keep me as a client, so I'm happy about that, Queen. I heard you got some clients. If you want me to, I can definitely – I got Terry still on the line, so I can tag team him and let you get to your clients because I just appreciate your time. I know you really want to be on this show, but I want to be respectful. If you do need to go – tell people how to contact you if they want to be coached, and I'll let you leave for this last segment so you can get to your clients. But thank you so much for being my tax person, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Kimberly, for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you. I know. I love you, Dr. Zay. And Terry is my hero, y'all. If y'all have not talked to Terry, y'all need to get in touch with Terry, so make sure he drops his information soon. But y'all can get in touch with me on Instagram at Tax Pro Kim, or you can go to Facebook, Kimberly Fowler, UNC Tax Business Coach Kimberly Fowler, or go to my website, www.coachkimberlyfowler.com.
Now, I love it. Terry, we're going to tag you in. Caller 016, we will be getting to you after the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
That's really, you know, from a mindset standpoint, I think that's where the most work is to be done, is that, A, we got to start thinking about infrastructure first. And then if we're thinking that way, then we have to say, okay, you know, if I have this cafe that does $1.2 million a year, I can't pay myself $300,000 to run that cafe. You know, I'm going to pay myself $100,000 to run that cafe. And, you know, I'm going to reinvest those dollars into starting the second, third, and fourth cafe, or making sure that I got the right POS, you know, fintech system, or whatever it is that they need. So I think that's what it is. Again, I don't know that anyone on this call has that issue, but maybe, you know, this is something you can deploy to your broader audience and broken down. But that's the real issue, is that they pull up in my office and the husband pulls up, they in business together, the husband pulling up, he in a, you know, 5 Series Benz, the wife in a Denali, and they're telling me that, you know, they don't have the resource to reinvest in the company. I'm like, you just drove up in it. You know, it happens. It happens every day. So I think that's what the most work is to be done. When we talk about the technical skill, I mean, I'm not a doctor, you know what I'm saying? But if I have an ailment, I know to go to someone that went to school 16 years for it. So I don't think the issue is that we have to know how to do it. We just have to, A, know to do it, and then secondly, be willing to do it, and then go find the subject matter experts to help us to build in that manner. But I don't think it's a scarcity of the information or availability of people to do it. It will require us to have a generation of sacrifice, right? And it'd be that delayed gratification that we're not always willing to do, because it's catch 22. A lot of our people will say, well, I'm not going to be able to get the traction in my community and get the business if I don't project success. So then what we do is we fake it till we make it, or we put the cart before the horse. And I think that's the biggest issue in our community.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, why no one ever tells you this about being in business? Special guest is Dr. Lene Javette. And our tag team man, Terry Simmons, the brother you just heard the cut from. But before we get to Terry again, let's go to 470-3016. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. Sorry about the long hold. We're trying to get to all of y'all, but thank you for coming in with us.
Good morning. This is Sherdon from Atlanta, currently in Chicago. On Oshie Printed. I've listened to so many things here, and my will is just turning because I have so many thoughts. I'm going to keep it short. One of the things that stood out for me, and I was like, oh, my God, I talk about this all the time, is the importance of going to work for someone else. And I think that is not talked about enough in our community. I think that we see starting businesses, and we think, I can do that. Mm-hmm. And we don't understand how impactful it is to go and work side by side. The likelihood that you'll be in a position to work for a corporate, a larger entity, and work alongside the CEO is slim to none. And so just really taking advantage of those opportunities. Like, if you want to be, I'm in the promotional products and print industry, if that's something you want to do, then you should come and work for a company like that. For at least 2 years. Like, don't go in and say, hey, I'm going to work for a second and think I'm going to figure out all their trade secrets and steal them and run out. No, like, go and really get in the meat and potatoes of it. I worked for my sister's company for a while because I wanted to get into doing trade shows, and she was doing it at one of the highest levels. And so I got to really understand the back end, but I went and I worked for her. I didn't just go pick her brain because she was my sister. Like, I worked, I got in, my feet dirty, so to speak. And so, like, doing that and then just understanding, some people not going to want to receive this, but it's the truth. All y'all ain't meant to be entrepreneurs. And understanding truly what an entrepreneur is. Like, it's someone who built a business, and businesses are in position because they employ. Some of us are just self-employed, and I need you to know the difference so that you're clear on what you're doing. If you're okay with self-employment and that is the ultimate goal, wonderful. But if you're really looking to build a business and truly be the definition of an entrepreneur, then you need to position yourself to hire, create jobs, build something, and most importantly, work together. I would much rather split 8-9-10-figure deals than own 100% of 6 figures. So anyway, I have a gazillion other thoughts, and I would also just want to close with, I'm here in Chicago for several reasons, but one is because I started a second business. And I have a business partner, and it is here in Atlanta. In Chicago. Forget where I'm at. It's called Cabrini Art House, so definitely check out CabriniArtHouse.com to follow that journey.
No, absolutely. Terry, let me let you speak to what Shadon has just said, because you speak to it so often, and you were the catalyst to the last cut, just talking about the mindset, and I want to end with some concept of sacrifice, but let me let you respond to Shadon before we let her go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to apologize in advance if you guys hear any white noise. I'm actually walking into a performance, so I'm going to be brief so that I don't keep people waiting. But, no, Shadon hit the nail on the head on a number of different fronts, and particularly when it comes to being willing to, in essence, serve as one's apprentice in exchange for compensation, in order to learn not only whatever the industry or the nature of the business is, but to learn all of the different intricacies that we've been talking about, you know, for the past couple hours. And we're in a space where the mindset is independence has, you know, the utmost value. And if I came independently, then somehow I'm diminishing my value because I'm not out here doing it for myself. But something that I want to touch on, and I think, you know, Kimberly spoke to it, as well as someone else, I don't remember who it was, about profit first. That is absolutely a strategy that every business should attempt to deploy. Here's the problem. Most of our businesses are undercapitalized from day one, so we're going into it in the negative. Mm-hmm. So when the first dollar comes in, that dollar does not have enough wiggle room to account for compensation because it's going back into operations, inventory, marketing, insurance, you know, whatever the case may be, debt, you name it. And so a lot of times it takes a while for there to be enough capital on the table, so to speak, for us to even compensate ourselves a livable wage. In some cases, it has to do with, you know, improper pricing structure. But in most cases, it's because we're just undercapitalized from day one. It's not like we go out here and raise venture capital or go to a traditional bank and get $500,000 to start a business. Usually, we're kind of piecing together savings and cards and, you know, loans from family members and things of that nature, and it may just be enough for us to get in the game. And so it can be difficult to figure out how to get off that particular treadmill. But yeah, it's been so much valuable information shared over the last couple hours. I just hope people internalize it, and particularly about the systems piece. Everyone said the same thing in a different way, is that you have to have an intimate understanding of your business to even figure out what type of coach or consultant that you need to hire. And here's something I think everyone needs to understand about that, is that you may not be able to hire one consultant to streamline every aspect of your business. Because just because someone can come in and streamline the sales process doesn't mean that they can do the same thing for your talent management or for your operations or for your marketing. You may have to kind of weave those experts together in a way where there's some integration so it all makes sense, but you're going to be the most knowledgeable person at the table throughout that process because you're going to understand the intricacies of your business better than they do.
No, that makes sense. Thank you for your time, King. We definitely got the white noise, but we can hear you, so thank you for your time. We're going to definitely close out here with Dr. Javette. She actually has a program that she needs to present as well. Thank you, Shadon, for your call. Definitely could have got you in sooner, so apologize for that. Last caller, 362, I don't know if I'll be able to get to you, but again, thank everyone that's called into the show. This is what we do. Dialogue and connect is what we do best. But if you will, right before you, in a sense, present, you know, what you have to offer, if you will, Dr. Javette, can you talk about the thing that Terry talked about in the cut, the idea of sacrifice? Like, that's something that people, I don't think, talk about. Like, what has been, in a sense, your sacrifice to become a successful business owner, and then tell them about your event and how they can stay in contact with you?
First, yeah, yes. So, yes, I can. But let me give a shout-out to Shadon too. Like, you had a house full of great people today. She does a lot of the merchandising for TSP, which is the mastermind that myself, Kimberly Fowler, and she has been a part of. And so she does amazing work. Definitely could have been on this panel. I love her to death. But as far as sacrifice goes, I'll be really quick on this one. I have had to move out of my house and go stay with my mom. I have had to have my son go and stay with his father so that his quality of life didn't have to change while I was becoming an entrepreneur. I have had to back out of relationships. I've had to – this might not seem like a big deal to y'all, but I'm a nail girl. I had to let my nails go. I had to let my Netflix go. I had to downsize my car. I've made sacrifices to get to the point, but to the place where I am today. And those are the external sacrifices. That's not even including the mental sacrifices and the things of that nature. And some people are like, yeah, but you still became a doctor. You still went to school during the process. You still made money. You still did all these things. Yes, but it's taxing. It's very taxing on you to be an entrepreneur. But I really like what Terry said about know why you do it. I help Black businesses make money. I help them to package and sell their expertise. I help them to charge what they're worth. I help them to create strategies to hit six and seven figures. Like, I love what I do, and I know who I do it for, and so it makes me really good at what I do. And even when I have bad days or bad weeks or bad months, I still show up because I know the purpose and the passion and the reason why I have my business, and that makes all of the sacrifice and all of the bad days worth it. So all that to say, I have an event coming up at the end of next month called Black Power, P-O-W-H-E-R. It's a conference for, it's literally around what we were just talking about. This is our third annual conference, and this year we're focusing on funding. So the theme is get to the money. What we're talking about is funding, financing, grants, loans, sales, because that's where most people are struggling in their businesses as black businesses. And so if anybody's interested, you can email me. I'm gonna have you email me because I want to do something special for the people of Mental Dialogue. So if you email me at mogul, M-O-G-U-L, like Oprah's a mogul, so M-O-G-U-L, mogul, at LaneeJavette, LaneeJavette.com, mogul at LaneeJavette.com, and let me know that you heard me on the Mental Dialogue. I'm going to send you guys a special promotional code specifically for the Mental Dialogue community. You guys show up for my homeboy, Montoya, in an amazing way, and I always like to show up for him. So if anybody is interested, you let me know you came from Mental Dialogue. I'm going to keep up with some type of a promo. I'm not sure what it's going to be yet, but it'll be something dope.
No, I love it. See y'all next Saturday. All I ask is that you think.
If I said to focus your energy, where would you start? Let's say you run a business, a school campus, a hospital, or a government facility. Finding ways to save can be overwhelming, but Georgia Power has energy efficiency tips and rebates to help. Things like improving lighting with LEDs, making HVAC upgrades, adding building controls, and more. Look, you've got a business to run and numbers to hit. Georgia Power can help you focus your energy where it matters most. Learn more at georgiapower.com/biz.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.